You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where we have no idea why Rocky is in prison and why he needs to be released ASAP. I'm your host, Justin Emlezeski, and if you happen to be in San Diego for Comic-Con on Saturday and you saw two guys or just a sign in the air that said, release the Snyder Cut, that was me. So thanks for stopping by, assholes. There's like five of you who are fans of the show. You couldn't have said hi. You couldn't have figured out that was probably me. Statistically, the odds, who could that possibly have been? And what I mean by that is somebody who not only believes in release the Snyder Cut, but actually has the wherewithal and the motivation to do something besides get out from behind Twitter. So that's the midside. Did I already say my name? I don't know. I don't remember. I'm Justin Emlezeski. Now let's bring in the other hosts who are joining me today from our nation's capital, where I believe it's hot as balls. And I think that's an official real number. Daniel T. Richards.
DC is hotter than everywhere else because we're closer to hell. Which is how that works.
See, I never understood that in Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Daniel, where they had like the Hellmouth, and then they opened a second Hellmouth at the end of the show. So the Hellmouth was in Sunnyvale, California, which, okay, I can understand that. But they opened the second Hellmouth, and it was in Cleveland, Ohio, or somewhere else near Cleveland. And I was like, okay, you know, I get it, but wouldn't it have been better to be DC?
Oh, much better to be DC, because this is where all the demons are. It is insanely hot here with insane humidity. I think we reached Death Valley temperatures, which is always fun. And but we had other things going on this week. It was the 50th anniversary of the moon landing. So good job, Neil Armstrong, for punching out that conspiracy theorist.
I think it was Buzz Aldrin.
Neil Armstrong is the guy who actually walked on the moon.
Yeah.
Buzz Aldrin is the guy who punched the conspiracy theorist. Got to keep my astronauts in order.
To be fair, those are equally great accomplishments.
As Justin pointed out pre-show, that's all the proof we need that man actually walked on the moon is a conspiracy theorist being punched out by an astronaut. So if you want to convince Justin of something, just be an old man with some righteous indignation.
I mean, this is why we love Clint Eastwood's later filmography, isn't it?
And Bill Belichick.
Correct. And you just heard laughing, also joining us from Dale's lawn, forgoing his white male gay privilege to identify as a woman, William Green.
Hello, hello. Yeah, great week here. I know everyone else is boiling in the heat wave, but we had some nice weather this week, and oh man, been busy hiring folks for the opening. Real soon now, TM, I'm opening the store, so I've been keeping busy. Had a sick dog this week, but he seems to be better now, so that's good. No vet trip was necessary, which is always an expensive prospect.
You're always all over the place with these openings. I don't know how to reply.
Well,
sick dog, vet,
in the notes,
is also
it says, you know, roulette. Catch people up on your life, so that's what I'm doing.
In fact, it does not say anything like that in the notes. It just has the introduction.
Yes, and.
No. Go ahead, Daniel. What were you going to say about dogs?
See, the
and
vet's also a roulette, right? Which is you go to the vet and they go, it's $500 and we don't know. Could work, might not work, might die, might live, might grow a fourth arm, fifth arm, sixth arm. We have no idea.
Yeah. So it's a roulette. Daniel, or is that just a place to take your pet kangaroo in Australia?
Yes, that's much more. I just think of the veterinarian as the people who couldn't make it through med school.
Been watching too much Rick and Morty, I see.
I don't watch that, Rick, because I can't stand hearing the word Rick 95 times in a Ricking episode, Rick.
Really, you had to make him do that joke, William?
Better than the rude joke.
Rick! On to the news, Rick. Rick, right. We need some news. Rick.
Just hit the music.
Well, I assure you, Mr. Listener, it really is that bad. These aren't harmless criminals. This isn't just a fad.
Before we get to the news, I do want to mention patreon.com/themidside, where you, our super awesome listeners, give us a couple bucks every time we produce this show. You can join and get some exclusive Patreon content and exclusive access to us on our Discord channel, patreon.com/themidside, where we will never disavow you like Trump disavowed his fans this week after a rally gone wrong. Yes, President Donald Trump on Thursday chided his supporters who chanted, quote, send her back, unquote, when he questioned the loyalty of a Somali-born congresswoman, joining widespread criticism of the campaign crowd's cry after Republicans warned about political blowback from the angry scene. In a week that corkscrewed daily with hostile exchanges over race and love of country, Trump also claimed he had tried to stop the chant at a re-election event Wednesday night in North Carolina. He said that he paused and he spoke quickly then to try to get through the chant. And he said, this is what he said about it. I was not happy with it. I disagree with it. And he would certainly try to stop other similar chants in the future. Of course, the chants were targeted at Democratic Representative Ilhan Omar of Minnesota. And she responded defiantly, saying that the president is a fascist. There you go. And that for stopping the chant, right?
He's a fascist for stopping the chant.
No, he's a fascist for being there while the chant is happening. And she continued, quote, we are going to continue to be a nightmare to this president because his policies are a nightmare to us. We are not deterred. We are not frightened, she told a cheering crowd that greeted her like a local hero at the Minneapolis St. Paul International Airport when she returned from Washington. Justin, this whole fight stemmed from a tweet by Trump saying that if people don't like this country, they can go back to where they came from and fix things there. So the question that's on everyone's mind this week is, of course, why is the president still allowed on Twitter?
Yeah,
that's not the question, but that's my question to you.
Oh, okay. That's your question to me? Okay, I wasn't sure or not.
No. The question on everyone's mind is, of course, is was Trump's tweet racist? That's been the question I've been asked, I don't know, over under 76 times since it happened.
If you hear one of the podcasts flipping out back there, apparently it was racist, and she really objects to it. So
she's an Ilhan Omar supporter?
Yeah, apparently. She's like, flipping, I've never heard this before. Like, I don't know what's going on, but... So I'm going to, which one do you want me to do first? The racist thing?
My question, because I don't care about the other question.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's really the whole thing. I mean, I think the answer to your question answers the second question, to be honest, right? Because did you see the other thing going around on Twitter, too, about like how even though Trump backtracked on his other thing? And he said the chant, he backtracked on that, but he didn't really, because then out of the other side of the mouth, he said this stuff about, you know, not being happy about people in our own country who hate our own country. Right.
Yeah.
So there's that, too. And yeah, that is something it's mind boggling to me that we've ended up here, that we're to the point that people who are in an office, and I mean any elected official, that has a certain weight to it and a certain seriousness to it, would put themselves on this platform where what they're going to say is going to be taken out of context. It's not even an issue of being allowed to. It's why would you want to be on there? Because it can only harm you. And that's what this whole thing is an example of. You know, this whole presidency, I've been waiting for a story that sort of encapsulates exactly what I think is wrong with this country, or encapsulates the results of what is wrong with this country. And to me, this is it. We've got two sides yelling at each other, and they're both saying completely asinine, ignorant, hateful, almost borderline evil on both sides things. And 90%
Justin,
of the problem is the medium they're using.
Justin, if you think there's something wrong with this country, why don't you go back to where you came from, Poland, and fix it there?
Wait, do I go back to Poland? Do I go back to Italy? I've got some founders roots in me. because apparently I'm related to George H.W. Bush. We'll get to that in a minute. But yeah, where do I go back to? But no, I mean, that's what I'm talking about here, right? Like, this woman, correct me if I'm wrong, she is a naturalized citizen, correct?
Correct.
What the fuck? Isn't that the entire point of this country, to be like, hey, come over here and become a naturalized citizen and go through the process? And then he's going to start saying, go back? Like, that's terrible. But then this other stuff where they just are, like, she accuses him of being a fascist? Like, we're not having a conversation anymore. We're just yelling dumb shit at each other.
William, I think one of the reasons it was important for us to talk about this story is we have a certain catchphrase that we tend to throw around. It's even on a t-shirt that you can buy at themidside.com/store.
Somebody buy me that shirt, by the way. I still don't have it.
Hail Snydra?
Yes, I have that one.
Okay.
That one? That's what I want to yell at this story. Hail Snydra. No, but because, you know, even among dear friends of mine on Twitter and Facebook this week, I got sort of the two sides of this horrible, I'll say it, false dichotomy, bro, which was, if you don't support the president and see what he's saying here, you know, you're the real racist and this has nothing to do with race, etc. And then the other side was, if you don't support Ilhan Omar, even if you disagree with her against this horrible racism spewed by the crowd and whatever, that you're a racist. So basically, if I support the president, I'm a racist. And if I don't, and if I support Ilhan Omar, I'm a racist. So could you dive deeper into why this is a false dichotomy, bro?
Also, could maybe, you point out what all of this has to do with Michigan?
Yes.
Maybe, but first I have to disagree with Justin a bit on this. So, you know, it's the boy who cried wolf with the dog whistling, right? Everything's a dog whistle. And without getting into the 4D chess trap, this was pretty purposeful by Trump. This is exactly what he does. Like, there was tons of bad press about the supposed concentration camps, right? And all of a sudden, he just... And also, the Democrats were turning against each other. You know, the Gang of Four, or whatever they're calling themselves, the social justice crew, were starting to get pushback.
Wait, they're supervillains now?
Yeah, they've been supervillains.
Sounds like a super. It sounds like a supervillain. The Gang of Four sounds like a supervillain.
They're the Squad.
The Suicide Squad. So the Suicide Squad was starting to get some pushback from Democrats, and they were calling any criticism of them racist. So what does Trump do? He steps in and becomes the target again. Now you might be thinking, why? What is this instinct he has to step in when the Democrats are self-destructing? He doesn't win the next presidential election without a strong social justice Democrat, without the Democrats being all crazy and social justice-y.
Correct.
So this is I'm not saying I'm not falling in the 4D chess trap, because this is exactly the kind of behavior he's done before. He has to make it about him in contrast with the kooky social justice left. So when this is not about actually destroying the left, right? The far left. Because otherwise you just let them self-destruct, right? He needs them to not self-destruct until at least after the election. And that's all this is about. This is about making it about him, because he's going to suck all the air out of the room, metaphorically, for any media coverage. And that's what he has to do in order to win.
I thought that's what he was going to do in all those gas chambers, though, was suck all the air out of the room.
No, he was going to put extra
those concentration
air in the
room. Oh, poisonous air. Okay. Yeah, you can respond, but I just want to say I don't disagree with any of that. I don't think it disagrees with what I said. I think you're just explaining the motivations behind it, which I think you're correct.
And it's
what I don't want people to do, what I don't want people to do is to conflate politics with principle.
Yes,
because there's
exactly.
Very little principle in politics. Politics is a mechanism by which politicians win elections so they can do things. Okay, so Trump is right now engaging in some of the purest form of politic that he engages in, which is this. I don't know what the exact numbers are, but it's within five of what I'm about to quote. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Ilhan Omar poll nationally at something like a 22% approval rating, a favorability rating. Sorry, people have about a 22% favorability view of these two congresswomen. So to put just a fine point on what you're saying, William, Trump is not trying to set up his campaign against whoever the nominee is, whether it's Biden, Sanders, Kamala Harris, Booker, Buttigieg, or any of the other million candidates who are running. He's trying to set it up as Trump versus Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Ilhan Omar, and the other of the squad. Because he's trying to set up his reelection campaign versus, as William put it, the kooky social justice left, because they are strongly, strongly viewed unfavorably across the country. So he's going to do everything he can to elevate the conversation around them so the Democrats must come and rally to their support. So the left must come and prop them up instead of quiet them down. That is what is going on here, and it is all terrible. And there are no, there is no one to support in this arena of politics. I do not support the president and the whole send her back and the go back to where you came from stuff. That is vile. And I don't support Ilhan Omar, who has said equally as vile things, remind you, including not the least of which is she described 9/11 as some people did some things. Okay, she's not a friend of any of yours out there, objectivists or libertarians, whoever, and she's not someone to be held up as a paragon of virtue against the evil fascist Trump. You can have it this way in this conversation, which is both sides of this are horrible and neither deserve your attention or patronage.
Yeah, and both sides are against freedom and individualism, right? Like, I don't, yes. I see this just like I see the infighting of the Democrats as good. I see this sort of calling out or poking the hornet's nest on tribalism good, too, because here's the thing. As unpopular as those folks are from one side of the aisle, on the other side of the aisle, Trump is equally as unpopular. Now, the problem with that unpopularity is that it's pro-tribalism that is making him unpopular, right? So there's no one, there's no one on the left-hand side saying, hey, individualism, right? And making Trump unpopular on that, on the correct principle. So that's the problem that, that we face right now. That's why the curve seems downward, at least for now.
Yeah, it's all downward. I mean, politics in America is right now between your collectivists and your nationalists, which is both forms of tribalism or just generally both forms of big C collectivism. So there's no winners here, and don't get caught up in the daily swirl of having to denounce what Trump says or denounce what Ilhan Omar says. Just generally denounce them all and move on with your lives and focus on principle. Focus on educating people about virtue and truth and philosophy and ideas, and stay away from the vile politics of the day on both sides, please.
Right. An important thing to remember, Daniel, in relation to what you're saying is the rhetoric both sides use to try and make you take their side. They make it seem like a moral imperative that if you do not virtue signal that you are on their side, that you are automatically on the other side. And then, of course, if you give into that pressure and you say, well, yeah, what Trump said was racist, or, you know, you say, oh, yeah, what Trump said was wrong, or you say, oh, you know, what Omar said was anti-Semitic, people then assume you're on the other side. So there's really almost no way of engaging in this without seemingly taking a side, which is the entire fucking problem with this thing. And I don't understand, Daniel, why people who are smart feel the need, especially on social media, to go out there and be like, oh, yeah, well, fuck Trump, fuck Omar, blah, blah, blah. It's like, why are you doing that? Why do you feel that need? This has nothing to do with you. It's all a fucking ruse. Why do you give into that social pressure?
I agree with you 100%, actually, but I'll give the sort of devil's advocate position.
Wow, I mean, is that a first time? First time?
It might be. I mean, I've gone up to like 92% before, but this time you've got my full agreement here. But I'll give the devil's advocate position. What I think some people would say is, and you can both respond, which is, okay, that's true. I don't usually fall into this, but this time it crossed a line. This time he went too far. This time the chant was actually fascist or was actually racist. And we need to be careful that in our denunciation of the false accusations of racism, that we don't miss out on actual racism. So what say you about that, either of you?
William, do you want to go first?
I don't think it matters, because we've got so much of... there's so much tribalism to point out. If you just sat there and pointed it out all the time, what is the end result? You're just crying into the wind. I don't think... It's about arguing about the principle. And sure, if you want to say, sure, that's racist, let's imagine what that conversation would sound like. You'd immediately have to point out the 37 racist statements said by the, what are we calling them? The Suicide Squad. And now it sounds like whataboutism, and you're not going to win the rhetorical argument, right? You're not going to convince anyone.
Yes.
Right. I mean, I think to add on to that, I think that's very well stated. I would just add on that I think people know that I'm generally against racism. So if there's something that is racist, I don't need to go around and decry every moment of racism in the world, or else that would be my entire fucking life.
Imagine if you did it with something more practical. Imagine if you had to go around and decry every instance of bad driving here in L.A.
Well, I try to do that.
Wait a minute.
Pretty much going insane.
Wait a minute. But we'd have no podcast content.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yes.
What would
I
talk to people about on the phone every day if I couldn't, like, argue or I couldn't decry bad driving?
And I think that's the ultimate point, right, you guys, which is how many times do I have to say that I'm against racism? Can we just assume that I'm against racism and that I know what racism is because I'm an intelligent human being? And I've proven that over and over again. I don't need to constantly come out and say I'm against racism. I think the Libertarian Party or something tweeted out that there's no room for racism in our country or whatever. And someone responded, ooh, super astute Libertarian Party. What's your stance on cancer? Which is kind of the point, right? Which is that there's a lot of bad things in the world, and I don't need to spend my entire day virtue signaling on social media that I'm against those bad things.
Well, let's continue this cancer metaphor, right? Saying, like, I will not ever say anything positive about anyone until racism is eradicated is the same thing as saying, like, I will never give medicine to a doctor until they cure cancer.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing else.
Get on it, doctors.
If you don't get that metaphor, fuck you, all right? That's the long and short of it, all right?
Yes, the rhetoric of the midside.
well, that's the point I get to with all of this, Dano. That's my point about forcing me to take a side. At a certain point, it's just like, dude, shut the fuck up and go play a video game, okay? Shut the fuck up, play a video game. Shut the fuck up and turn on Hulu. There's so much fucking content out there now. Why are you worried about this shit?
That's right. Well, Miss Michigan is worried about this S, as they have stripped Kathy Zhu, a Donald Trump-supporting model, of her title over, quote, racist tweets. Interesting. So, Kathy Zhu is a 20-year-old University of Michigan student who is known as Political Kathy on all of her social media platforms. She was born in China and immigrated to the U.S. when she was five. She first gained internet fame during the 2016 election campaign, and she was in the running, or it's a little bit murky about how this actually works. She was a national finalist for Miss something or other, Miss Michigan, and she recently received a letter, an email, saying that she's being stripped of that crown over past tweets that she sent that violated Miss Michigan's rules. So what are examples of these tweets that got her title stripped? Well, in one of them, she said that, quote, I cannot find it now. Sorry, these articles are so poorly written that I can't actually find the tweets of what she said. Justin, do you have them?
Oh,
here's one.
Yeah, they're in the article.
She said, quote, did you know the majority of black deaths are caused by other blacks? Fix problems within your own community first before blaming others. So that's racism, I guess. And then in 2018, she sparked controversy after posting about a, quote, try a hijab event at the University of Central Michigan, where she was apparently asked to try on a hijab and she refused to do so. So, what did the letter to her actually say? Well, it said, it has been brought to our attention of the Miss World America organization that your social media accounts contain offensive, insensitive, and inappropriate content, and in violation of MWA's rules and conditions, specifically the contestant requirement of being of good character and whose background is not likely to bring into disrepute Miss World America or any person associated with the organization. So, Justin, is this political targeting, or do you think that there is some appropriateness to this on the part of the Miss World organization?
Well, I think they just realized that they had given a generic basic Asian girl a beauty title and had to strip it away from her, and they just needed to come up with a reason. I think that's what this is. I mean, William, are there that few Asians in Michigan that they were like, ooh, Asian, exotic, you're a beauty queen? Like, I don't understand what happened here. This is the real story here. Like, I had heard of this girl before because, like, Midsider Katrina, you know, really doesn't like her for hilarious reasons. But, her reasons are completely correct for not liking this girl. This girl is a complete example of someone who's just using... she's like AOC on the right, quote unquote. And I say on the right because there are people who will just take on the image of certain things in order to get social media famous, and that's what this girl has done. But I lost my point because of that. But yeah, I mean, as far as why they did this, I think this is completely quote unquote political targeting. I say political because it's not, I mean, again, I don't really think this girl's right. I just think that these are people who are trying to smuggle in, right? Because beauty contests are supposed to be a certain level of behavior, right? As part of your beauty, it's not supposed to be purely physical. I hope this contest wasn't purely physical. And they got rid of her for that reason, where they're saying, you know, oh, well, right-wing politics are a certain way that aren't supposed to be, you know, beautiful and glamorous. So they got rid of her for that reason. I do think it was political. But I also think it's funny the way they did it. Like, they send an email where they're like, we're going to not recognize you as if even having participated in this, and we would appreciate it if you would allow us to do that. It was completely like, we're going to evade reality, and we need you to contribute to this evasion of reality. Rather than them releasing a statement and saying, we made a mistake, we didn't do a thorough background check, and because of that, we're going to need to revoke this crown because of the mistake we made. Which is what an honest... In an organization with integrity would have done. Instead, they were like, please evade reality with us.
Yeah. So, William, I know you're deeply affected by this.
Yeah. Well, it's Michigan.
Yeah. I mean, I was following this closely. And, you know, just like Justin, I was following her on Instagram.
No, hold on. If anyone's noticed, I've disabled the Midside Instagram account, so I was not following anyone on Instagram. I looked
at her
Instagram.
There was a good-looking Asian on Instagram that you were not following before you closed your account?
Okay, first of all, Daniel, good-looking?
That's racist.
Help me out here, Daniel. Good-looking.
She won a beauty contest.
In Michigan, so... there's a curve, right?
Daniel, just back me up here.
So, okay. She's, you know, more attractive than the average person, but I wouldn't say I find her particularly attractive. But that's, you know, not to each their own. And I think William is pointing out that you have a particular...
pattern.
Aesthetic that might draw more attention to you for you than for others. So... and she is wearing a MAGA hat holding a gun of some sort. William, I don't know what the gun is.
So those two things cancel each other out? Okay.
So, I don't know. William, as a woman, mm-hmm. Are you personally offended by this affront against this young woman?
Yeah, I think that if this is... we see this a lot... or I experience this a lot in the gay community. If your views don't conform, then something is wrong with your character, right? And that's the explicit argument they're making here. Your views do not align with mine, therefore something is wrong with your character. And that's, I know we'll get into that on Life on the Midside. We're going to see that argument made again. But something's very, very wrong. Something's very collectivistic about that line of reasoning.
So what if I made a very abstract argument here, which is this, Justin? Their rules are that you can't bring disrepute upon the Miss World Association, whatever it is. Now, let's assume that the universe of people who care about the Miss World Association are mostly on the left, and this person being on the right would bring, quote-unquote, disrepute to the organization. Therefore, correct decision.
So only half of the population matters as far as the repute? Like, by this logic, you can never hold a beauty contest ever again. Or you can only hold collectivized beauty pageants,
right? Well,
yeah,
you just give a political test before... Like you were saying, Justin, you screen them beforehand. You make sure that they've properly virtue signaled and are woke enough on their social media accounts before you allow them to enter the contest.
Right. I mean, I assume there's already a background check on these people, right? I mean, you don't want your Miss Michigan to have committed a drive-by. Well, maybe Miss Michigan, but you don't want your Miss Miss New Mexico to have committed a drive-by shooting, right? I mean, that's part of the background check, I would assume, a criminal background.
Yeah, I guess.
So now we need an ideological background check.
Dude, you have a great idea. We should have woke background checks. Let's set up a website. We'll investigate. You send us someone's name and one of their social media accounts, and we'll do a woke background check. We'll see if they are woke enough. And if they are woke, we'll get into the minutia of which problematic views they have where they're not woke enough. So that way you can let them in, but if they start to get too uppity, you can point out the fact that, I don't know, they weren't woke enough in this one situation.
I'm going to simplify this idea. I like it. I love it. I'm going to simplify it. We're going to create a website. Is this person wokeenough.com or wokeenough.com? That's what we're going to call it, wokeenough.com. Somebody go buy that right now so it doesn't shoot up in prices so they don't gouge us. But wokeenough.com. It's going to be just a field. You put in the name of the person. It says, you know, put in the name of whoever you want to see if they're woke enough. And you click submit. And then it says no. Solve the problem for you.
Very good. Well, speaking
of
somebody
who's certainly... Hold on, that's the free version. And then when you pay, we'll actually tell you where they're not woke enough.
Everywhere.
It's just a picture of the Earth. So
that'd be hilarious. The biggest troll, but also the biggest ripoff.
Someone who's certainly not woke, Dennis Prager, testified before this Congress this week at the Senate, in fact, on allegations of tech censorship against conservatives, despite the fact that his channel, PragerU, receives over a billion video views a year. So, this is a complex story that we've sort of been talking about on and off, but this particular angle is one that's bothered me a lot lately, so I strongly suggested this story in the show prep. So here it is. So the Senate Judiciary
Subcommittee... I just want to point out a little behind the scenes for you midsiders out there. By strongly suggested it, he means he actually suggested it.
Right. Usually
when
I don't
care. When he
actually
makes the effort to suggest the story, then I know he wants it on there. Otherwise... he just doesn't say anything.
That is a strong suggestion by the nature of the fact that I suggested it. Yes.
Also, he doesn't ever say anything, but if a story is particularly bad, then he'll say not to do it. Otherwise, we just do everything.
That's right. So here's the thing. It was a subcommittee of the Senate Judiciary Committee. It was, in fact, a subcommittee on the Constitution. And the subject was Google's alleged censorship of conservatives, particularly on YouTube, but they also got into search results and whatnot. And so Prager opened his testimony by paraphrasing a Holocaust-era poem, saying, "I promise you one day you will say, first they came after conservatives and I said nothing, and then they came after me and there was no one left to speak up for me." So apparently Google's going to round us up and put us in internment camps.
At the border, in cages.
Camps. That's right. So... this is about PragerU's channel, and what they're specifically talking about in this case is YouTube's decision to restrict about 20% of PragerU's online 5-minute video shorts on the grounds that they contain mature content. But the question is, what does restrict mean? So I think it means a couple different things, but one of the things that Google pointed out that it means is that it hides those videos from approximately 1.5% of users who elect for restricted control. Now, for those of you who are bad at math, like me, that means that 98.5% of users can still find and see these videos with no problem. So the argument, though, is that...
That's not a real understanding of what's going on here. But sure, that's the way Google says it.
Well, it's not just the way Google says it. There's another element to it.
Hold on, it is. So if you're gonna state that, I gotta correct you. Here's what's going on with YouTube. There's two interrelated things that have the same effect about video suppression.
But go ahead.
The first one is that they age restrict content. Okay. And Prager's also confused about this, and the media is confused about it. Everyone's confused about this. So that's the first way. The second way is with how people consume videos. YouTube plays algorithmically with your subscription notifications, what shows up in your recently updated feed, and what shows up in your latest, and then... recommended. So as YouTube has shifted viewers more towards consuming videos from the recommended and latest, and toying with which of your subscriptions actually show up in latest, the algorithm takes into account how advertiser friendly the video is, quote unquote. So things like age restriction and mature content make those videos become suppressed. So let's say you are a YouTuber, like YouTube watcher, and you have subscribed to PragerU. You may not see that a new video has come out from Prager unless you click on his channel and then see that there are updates to the channel. Also, it prevents videos from going viral. There's people who've dug into this and made really cool graphs pointing out that only videos from media companies, which only garner several hundred thousand views, get picked up on the trending tab, which is the other major place that viewers go to discover content and watch content. While videos that are actually trending, like actually getting a lot of views, don't show up on trending. So their curves for viewership are incredibly suppressed compared to similar videos from like 3 or 4 years ago who hit that sort of growth spurt of becoming like compelling content. And so you get in this weird situation, like just to give one example, the biggest individual YouTube content creator, PewDiePie, has only trended one time in North America in 2019. Everywhere else, every other region, he's trended something like 40 times. The views are the same, though. Like, if you look at his views broken down by region, they're the same. It's just that the algorithm has said PewDiePie is not advertiser-friendly in North America. Therefore, he will never make it onto the trending tab.
This is bad improv, but... Everything you said there nothing contradicts what I said. And nothing supports what Prager is saying, in my opinion.
This is the episode where William says he's disagreeing, but he's not disagreeing.
Point being that Prager is making the argument that his videos are being censored. My point and Google's point is that they're not being censored. We can talk about the difference between downplaying something in an algorithm or making it less accessible to monetization. But if you type in PragerU, you can go to his channel and find these videos. If you put in the right search terms, you can find these videos. And in some cases, they will be recommended to you, but in less case than what William explained. It's less likely that they'll be forwarded to you that way. But they're not being censored. It's not like Google is saying, no one can watch these videos under any circumstances. We're not going to host them on our platform because you're a conservative, etc. They're not being censored. in that way. And one, I don't even like to use the word censored because it's something that governments do to people, not something that companies do to people. But two, it's just not even true that YouTube is engaging in this type of hiding it from all people under all circumstances argument that Prager is making, which is just not true. Plus, as this article points out, other left-wing outlets are facing the same type of thing. In fact, the Young Turks have 71% of their videos that are restricted for mature content. The Daily Show has 54% of its videos that are restricted for mature content. Democracy Now! Has 46%. The History Channel
this
has
24%. This is a great example of a false dichotomy, right? Because this is affecting folks on the left increasingly as the algorithm has gotten tighter on what's advertiser friendly. But again, because the distinction here because of this misunderstanding of how the algorithm works, no one really knows, right? It's completely opaque, so that's why people don't know. But based on like data analysis of folks outside of YouTube, Daily Show, even though it may be restricted as mature, because it's put out by a media org, Google will still put those on the trending page. And
yes.
And I think it's important to remember that for content creators, growing the audience is sort of like their shtick, right? Like they need to grow their audience in order to be successful on the platform. And so this is forcing major changes in how the relationship between YouTube and content creators and advertisers, right? This is all about making sure there's less controversy about YouTube. It's a lot easier to, well, first of all, something like Jon Stewart or The Daily Show or Jimmy Kimmel, Jimmy Fallon, those guys aren't going to be as controversial, right? They've already made it through the TV censors. So it's way safer for YouTube to promote those guys and try to get advertising money that way than it is for someone like, let's say, Steven Crowder.
Yeah. Justin, do you want to jump in here at any point?
Yeah.
It is your show.
Well, I was wondering when I was going to get to do my thing. And I think this actually bleeds into the next story a lot that was a really bad metaphor considering the next story, but
hold that in your brains, listeners, as we go to the next story.
Once you hear the next story, listeners, you're going to laugh really hard when you realize that. I want to look at this from a different perspective. I agree with everything you guys are saying. I think everything you're saying is correct, but I want to look at this from the user standpoint. I have to ask you guys a question. Am I the only person who, when I find like a band I like, or I find a show I like, or I find a channel I like, that I go directly to the band's website or social media feed or the channel myself because I don't want anyone mediating between me and them?
We are a dying breed, Justin. I do the same thing, but we in fact are a dying breed. That is not how most people consume content. They consume it algorithmically,
but it needs to go back because look, all that's happening, we have to go back, but all that's happening, all that is happening, Daniel, is these companies are realizing what the cable TV companies knew before. They have all the power. They can decide what to show and what not to show. Everyone was fooled when Facebook first came out, when YouTube first came out, when Twitter first came out, because they didn't realize they had all the power at first, or if you want to be more insidious in your interpretation, they hooked people in by making it seem like they got everything no matter what without a filter, and then they slowly, you know, now that they had them hooked like drug addicts, they slowly started filtering stuff. I mean, it certainly seems like Facebook's doing that, but they've realized they have all the power so they can show what they want and what they can't want. And this is how it goes into the next story. This is why I have always been an advocate of if you really like something, buy the physical copy. The idea that somebody else has a copy and you stream it.
Wait, YouTube has physical copies now?
Well, that's a problem with YouTube, right? That's a problem with YouTube. But I would at least, if there's something you really like, rip the show off of YouTube and then you can have it because we'll see with this next story why that's a problem. But that's why I advocate, like, if there's a show you really like, buy the physical media of it. And yes, Netflix, YouTube, who they don't have it for a lot of these things. But that's the problem because they own it, and then they can decide when you see it and how you see it. And if they just take your favorite thing down, isn't that what the Snyder Cut's all about? Aren't these people just acting like WB acted with the Snyder Cut? I mean, you're laughing because I brought it there, but is it not the same thing? There's a movie by my favorite director out there that they get to be the gatekeepers for, which they own it. They own it. They can do whatever they want with it. But if they're giving you the opportunity to have it, have it. That's all I'm saying. You have to look at it from yourself.
All right, gentlemen. We're breaking into the Walters next weekend, and I'm going to have my favorite painting, The Tulip Folly. So get your gear ready. I've got my lockpick set. We'll have the helicopter swoop in after we grab the painting, and then we'll be off. And then I'll
someone
have
start a physical Facebook copy. Event called They Can't Stop Us All. Storm the Walters.
Okay, well, so yes, obviously there are some legality issues with downloading or ripping off of YouTube or Netflix.
Yeah, Justin. Cheesy
right.
Pete's.
Okay, so they're obviously that. But you could advocate, you could say, hey, Netflix, hey, YouTube, I will buy a physical copy of Cobra Kai if you release it. I would buy a physical copy of Cobra Kai season 1 and 2 if they released it.
I can hear you getting older as you talk. I can hear you aging.
Yeah, he wants an 8mm. He wants it on 8mm.
It has to go back to that, though. That's the only way to truly make it so you can't lose this art.
There is some interesting elements with streaming. I don't think we're going back to the physical media world ever. My point about this is that I'm tired of conservatives using the word censorship and crying over quote-unquote censorship of all these organizations. If you want to see PragerU videos, go to the PragerU channel. Oh, God, the horror of having to go all the way down the deep, dark web to the PragerU channel to watch their videos. My God, the horror of the suppressed speech that you must feel right now, that you have to go all the way to youtube.com/PragerU in order to see PragerU videos.
Well, honestly, Daniel, this is the same argument I see about professional wrestling, where WWE has figured this out. They've desanitized their product to make it marketable on a global scale. So, you know what always shows up in my fucking videos to watch is all these WWE videos. And people yes. complain, oh, well, it's for children. It's desensitized. It's desanitized. It's not interesting. There's all those other fucking promotions that you can go watch. Go on Twitch and watch Impact's Twitch channel. You can watch them. You can watch AEW on the Bleacher Report streaming service. There are other ways to do it. You just have to put in a little bit more effort. And that's ultimately the point I'm making. I agree with you completely. But people would rather play victim than take control of their own life and pursue their own values.
Well, I think there are some content creators taking control of things. I mean, Prager is just the tip of the iceberg when it comes to this. There's tons of channels that have been, as the algorithm changes, getting videos from 2015, getting community guideline strikes, and then their channel get deleted. And so what you see now is there's two actions going on here, right? There's these folks trying to get the government to do something about it, which I don't support. But then you have folks like Tim Pool and like Dave Rubin and stuff diversifying where their content is available, right? They're putting it up on BitChute. They're putting it up on Mines. They're going other places with better policies. And I think that's the real answer. That's what we should be encouraging content creators to do. But it's hard, right? The audiences are smaller there. YouTube, the story here is YouTube started with the promise of broadcast yourself. And it's changed now to be advertiser friendly. And as long as content creators come to terms with that and find other places where they can put out their content and start to get audiences, then one, this will self-correct YouTube, and two, we'll be able to get the content we want to see.
But again, I agree with you. I'm just saying the other prong of what you're saying. So do that and promote that. But on the other hand, the other prong is coach your audience up as well to be more self-responsible consumers and saying, hey, if you love our content, we're going to tell you where our content is. go to that. Go to themidside.com/podcast. Go to the Podbean stream for it. Don't just go to iTunes for it. Tell them where it is. And tell them, hey, if you want it, go directly to it. Don't just wait for it to come to you.
And I have one last point about this, which is not one I fully thought through. So I apologize if there are inconsistencies because I haven't fully fleshed it out yet. But, you know, YouTube being quote unquote advertiser friendly or creating the community that they want, even if we disagree with that community, isn't that the entire point we make about capitalism? Isn't that the entire point we make about private property?
Yeah, Daniel, I understand you're so stuck on this. This is a change. They're changing, which is fine. They're allowed to change. The problem is they're doing it arbitrarily, right? They said, build your career, content creators, on this platform with these rules that we have, and then they start moving the bar. And I think we need to recognize it's okay to be upset about that as a consumer and as a content creator. Like, what YouTube of 2015 is a very different place than YouTube of today. But
not for 99.9% of channels. That's my point. This is affecting some channels, but it's not the
mass
effect.
I think you're way underestimating the number of channels this is affecting.
No, I think you're way overestimating it, William. I work in this space every single day.
There is not a content creator in my feed that has not talked about the changes between copyright and content guidelines, community standards. There's not a single one in my feed that hasn't done a video on that.
I am a content creator who's putting stuff into these feeds every
day.
You've
never gotten a copyright strike. You've never gotten a community guideline strike.
Literally zero.
I think,
and every other content creator I work with has gotten literally zero.
I think
99.9% of content creators are not affected by this.
If we look at the top YouTube streamers, those are the ones that are getting affected. You have almost every channel with more than 100,000 views has run into this problem.
Okay, not true, but fine. We can assert that, except that there's no data to support that.
All right, I'll go find the data for the next show. We can dig into that, because I think I think you're living in a bubble. There are certain types of content creators where this happens to all the time.
Content creation is what I do for a living.
But you're not a commentary channel. You're not a gaming channel. There's certain class of content creators where this is unavoidable. They deal with this problem all the time. Look at the top YouTube creators. PewDiePie, it has to deal with it all the time. Philip DeFranco has to deal with it all the time. He does tons of videos on the topic.
They have billions of views, which is the point. They have to quote unquote deal with it all the time, yet poor them, they have billions of views. Sad day.
I think this is an incredible insensitivity to what's actually going on here. Because
I think this is channels big and small in entire genres
of YouTube. I mean, look at the one change to the algorithm in, I think, 2017 snapped a whole class of content out of YouTube. It's just not available anymore. Like,
99% of content creators are not affected by this. They're just not.
Look, I'm enjoying this, but can I make a point here that I think it is relevant?
No, Justin, because I demand that your algorithm feature me more, because that's what people want to hear. So therefore, you're shut out now. I demand it. I demand it, Justin. And because I demand it, I should have it. The end.
Well, this is my show, so I can kick you off whatever I want.
Oh, it doesn't matter if it's your show. Doesn't matter if you own it. Doesn't matter whatever, because I demand it. I want it the way I want it, not the way you want it. The end.
Well, that's the point. Like, that's the point I'm going to make. Like, all we're arguing is, like, Burger King and McDonald's. And the point I'm making is these channels that are losing the stuff that they're losing by the way these new algorithms are and everything, they're losing the people who click mindlessly. That's all they're losing. They're not losing the people who actually care about their content. It's like, oh, there's a new PewDiePie video, I'm going to click on it. So all they've done is made it so these people have to work harder rather than just have it get these easy people come through. That's all it is.
I think both of you are falling on one side of the false dichotomy, which is why I think I'm so frustrated. It's the fact that things changed without warning and arbitrarily and all those other things. That's a valid complaint to have. And I have sympathy for that complaint.
I have sympathy for people who like 13's Reasons Why.
Wait, one last thing. I'm not saying that things didn't change, but I'm just saying, like, you didn't think they were going to fucking do this? That they didn't realize they were going to be in charge of the content and they could decide what you see and what you don't? It's just naivete. And then they're angry about their own naivete. That's all I'm saying. And it goes right into 13 Reasons Why, the same reason people are upset about this bullshit, too.
Netflix show 13 Reasons Why has decided to cut the infamous suicide scene after multiple seasons. So in a statement made on Tuesday, the Netflix series announced that it would cut its controversial 3-minute-long suicide scene, a show that follows Hannah Baker, who leaves behind 13 tapes for the reason she killed herself. The final episode of season 1 depicts the suicide in full view as Hannah cuts her wrists and eventually bleeds out in a bathtub in a horribly gruesome scene, thus previous reference to Justin's horrible joke. The scene caused major backlash following the show's premiere on Netflix. Now, over 2 years later, and ahead of season 3, the series has finally agreed to cut the scene, insensitive language there, in a move that's
long overdue,
according to this author. So here's the statement from Netflix on Twitter. We've heard from many young people that 13 Reasons Why encourage them to start conversations about difficult issues like depression and suicide and get help, often for the first time. Still continuing, as we prepare to launch season 3 later this summer, we've been mindful about the ongoing debate around the show. So on the advice of medical experts, including Dr. Christine Motier, Chief Medical Officer at the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, we've decided with creator Brian Yorkey and the producers to edit the scene in which Hannah takes her own life from season 1. So, Justin, this isn't the first time content creators have gone back and re-edit their work. We all laugh at the George Lucas revisions of some of the Star Wars stuff, but also Steven Spielberg went back and took out guns out of E.T., which I think is a personal affront to William, and replaced them with walkie-talkies. So
those dangerous walkie-talkies. Think of all the radiation.
I know. So
South Park famously made fun of that, right? In a very funny bit. Yeah.
So is this creator's prerogative? Is this revisionist history? What the hell is going on here?
I mean, I think it's both of those things. I mean, look, Netflix owns it. The creators created it. They can do whatever the fuck they want with it. And Netflix has the distribution, so they can take it away from everyone else. Now, there's a bit of evasion of reality here, where if you think nobody's pirated this and downloaded it off of Netflix and has these copies, it's never going to go away. So there's a bit of evasion of reality here on the part of the creators and Netflix. It's also virtue signaling, right? But it's also, and this is the point that really, really stands out to me. Two points. First of all, there's the whole physical media thing, right? Where now we're going back to the point that if you really want to own a show and it's out on physical media, buy it, because Netflix can just change anything they want at any point. And then we've put ourselves in this position where they're in the power there. But there's a greater issue here. That's what they're deciding to edit out of 13 Reasons Why. I mean, there's a reason it was in the last episode. That was the climax of the entire season. Think about that for a second. Think about that. So you edit that scene. It doesn't edit that the climax to the entire first fucking season is a girl committing suicide. What about how the entire climax of the second season is a guy getting sodomized on a broom? What about that? Are they going to edit out that entire scene?
Who the hell is watching this show?
Fucking people who are sick is what it is. And I mean that quite literally. To continue to enjoy it. Like, it's so dark and so disgusting. It is naturalism to the nth degree. And that it is arbitrary because somebody complained and people are complaining about that's what they're editing out. Yet this show still exists. If Netflix really wanted to take a stand, They would just say we're not making any more of this show. If they had any real principles, they would say we're not making any more of this show because of how grotesque it is. But they don't. It's the same thing as YouTube. You can sit here and you can complain about what they're doing, and I can rant all I want and say they have no principles, blah, blah, blah. But are we surprised? Is it a surprise Netflix did this? I mean, look, I think it's great Netflix is giving Zack Snyder all this money to do the Army of the Dead movie and to do this new anime series with Jay Olivia. But it's only a matter of time before this hurts him too. So it's a rock and a hard place for these content creators as well, because you got to go with somebody, but at some point, the bigger they get, the more likely they are to fuck you.
Wait, what? Oh, Daniel, I have some breaking news. Leonardo da Vinci has re-released the Mona Lisa. It's now with a darker skin tone and curlier hair to be more representative.
Isn't the breaking news here that Leonardo da Vinci's alive?
Oh, he actually came out of the grave to make this correction. It was that important to him.
So brave. He's so brave. He's so brave. And he's transitioning to be a Lena da Vinci, but yes.
Oh, this so just brave. A Roots has been re-released, and now all the slaves are white.
Oh, wait a minute. No, not woke, not woke. So, William, that's really funny you made these jokes, because my question to you was going to be, what's next? What does Netflix change next? What shows get changed next? And I'm sure it goes beyond Netflix. It's going to be, or wasn't it Toy Story that recently re-released Toy Story 2 without a quote unquote Me Too scene in it or something like that? I just saw the headline. I didn't read the story because I can't. I just can't anymore.
Well, I'll tell you what's going to happen before William answers. Hold on.
Okay.
Before he answers, I'm going to be out there picketing next year for the Snyder, just Army of the Dead in general, because they're going to watch it and they're going to go, you know what? We made a mistake giving you $90 million. That's what's going to happen next.
I was going to say your sign's just going to be release the original cut of everything.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, sorry.
At the risk of sounding like old man Justin, I have a CD of the original soundtrack of Aladdin with the correct words to Arabian Nights. I'm sure that's going to be impossible to find someday.
It is impossible to find. It is impossible to find because I had a tape that I listened to all the time, where it said it, where they cut off your ear if you don't like your phrase. And for about 10 years, I've been trying to find one with that on it, and I can't.
It's the most terrible insert. If you listen to the current soundtrack, like if you download it on Apple Music or from the Play Store, you can tell where the insert is. Like, it's so terribly done. Like, who is the sound engineer on that?
So, I mean, where does this end, though? This is very, to use an overused cliche, very 1984, right? This is, everything goes down the memory hole. Oh no, there was never a scene where she killed herself. You're crazy.
Yeah, it is sort of, it starts giving you that icky book burning feeling, right? I mean, maybe we should change Huck Finn. I mean, it's already not allowed to be read in schools, but maybe we just change it so it can be allowed to be read in schools. I don't know.
Yeah, it's kind of scary. This is, someone said to me recently, we're going away from the dystopian future of A Brave New World back to the dystopian future of 1984, which I thought was somewhat amusing.
Yeah, but I want the audience to be, to give us some props here, to be all narcissistic for a second. This is a terrible show, right? Like, we already stated that. Yet
the
we still.
Oh,
he said narcissistic, and then he said this is a terrible show.
13
and I was like,
Reasons
Wait.
Why? Sorry, it's a terrible show. But
so
here we are standing up
for props for ourselves.
Yeah, here we are standing up for the artistic principle of even a terrible show. Right, like you should not. If this fits in with your crappy evil theme, then you shouldn't change it. Right, if it's part of the story, in fact, you can't change it. And what I mean by that is, it's still in there even when it's not, right? The guns are still in E.T. even though it's not, right? You know that those people standing there at that scene in E.T. represent force, whether they're actually showing guns or walkie-talkies. Yeah. You'd have to do more than just edit the scene digitally.
Yeah, but it does. It makes it worse. Like, this scene, editing out the suicide, lessens the impact of the tapes. So you watch this whole season, right? If we're gonna talk about artistic integrity of this narrative, right? You watch the whole season and you hear all the tapes of how all these people contributed to this girl's death, and then you get to the end of the season and you don't see how horrific her death is. It undercuts the psychological and philosophical impact of everything these kids did, these people did on the 13 tapes. Because you don't actually see, you don't experience the effects. So it makes the art worse.
Yeah. I actually support the revision of some art, mostly Jackson Pollock paintings, where I would wish that someone would go back and actually finish them. That's really the only art I support changing.
All right, I'll start eating Mexican food.
No. Wait, I think you misunderstand what I want.
I think we all misunderstand what Jackson Pollock was going for.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what I didn't misunderstand? What they were going for with the new Lion King. Let's delve into that in The Hope for Romantic with JML. Put me into syndication. Broadcast to a network station of people viewing their favorite episodes. I can't find a new pitch to throw the studio. I need a rerun to better cast the next series of events. In the air timeline lapse, my made-for-TV type was written. When I wasn't focused on. If you have not yet joined our Discord channel, please do so. Go to themidside.com or themidside.com/podcast. In any episode link, you can click on a link to join our Discord, and you can join the conversation and help influence this show, or just generally see what we're talking about when the show is not on. A recent example that didn't make the show because it came out after the outline, but was released yesterday when we were recording this, so we're recording this on a Sunday, so it was released on the Saturday of Comic-Con, was the new Picard trailer. Midsider Frank threw that up there in Discord, and him and William had a little exchange about it, and now I'm going to ask William. William, what do you have to say about the new Picard trailer?
I am still skeptical. This was the perfect thing to put in Comic-Con to help show some fan service. But we know that it's in the new license, which may make it impossible to do properly. But at least it lights a very small ember of hope that the show could be watchable. I don't know. What did you think, Justin?
I was very confused at how they could use the original communicator from Next Generation. That was the first contact
communicator. By paying lots of money.
So for that one image, they paid a lot of money.
I'm sure of it, based on the licensing leaks.
Okay. And then the other thing is, and this is a spoiler for the trailer, so if you're worried about being spoiled for a trailer, I don't know what's wrong with you. But the whole reveal of 7 of 9, it almost felt like pandering to me. Like, I get the Borg were an important part of Picard's backstory. For this show, like, so his story in Next Generation, the Borg are so important, and First Contact so important. They're important in Voyager too. But how many times are we going to go back to this well? And do we really need to bring 7 of 9 into Picard's story? So there was a lot I liked, but, you know, with these young kids, and he's going to help them, and blah blah blah. But then it's like, who is this girl? Is it his daughter? And then it's the typical story everyone's doing now. I mean, Bill and Ted are doing it, right? Where they have daughters, and it's the next generation, and it's all this typical thing where we're going to take these old stories and we're going to make all the old stories about women now. So while there was a lot that I thought worked narratively in this trailer, there was a lot that was just, it was pandering, it was typical, and it doesn't give me a lot of hope.
Yeah, I think there's a fine line to walk between fan service and pandering, right? You've got to put some fan service in to get some of that fan excitement, but it's way too easy to cross that line into pandering.
Right, and if you want to see who's been doing it right so far, check out DuckTales. I think the new DuckTales has had a great balance of originality and also references to the old. And actually, I don't know if you saw either of you the... I may have sent it to you, Daniel. The Comic-Con poster for DuckTales. it's basically going to have all the Disney Afternoon characters in there now. They've rebooted Darkwing Duck. There's going to be Rescue Rangers. There's going to be Tailspin. They even hinted at the Wuzzles in there.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Wow.
So they're whoever the guy who's in charge of it, I follow him. And look, again, this is to as William said, to prop ourselves up a little bit. His episode that the rebooted Darkwing Duck was very well done, but it was also clearly critical of filmmakers like Christopher Nolan and Zack Snyder and their take on superheroes. And I think there were some fundamental flaws with that criticism, but that criticism was still well done, and the episode was still well done. So I would call DuckTales romantic, and that was a romantic episode. So it shows how you can have romanticism with incorrect ideas. All right, anyway, speaking of Disney, because that took a weird, circuitous, snake-like path, but speaking of Disney, I went and saw the Lion King remake.
Okay.
What have you guys heard about this?
There's walkers in the barn and Lori's pregnant.
I've heard that it was, on one hand, a spectacle to behold, sort of a CGI masterpiece that was lackluster and really didn't have the word I kept hearing is the magic of the original.
I would say that's a... Go ahead.
I heard that the voice acting was all over the place and sometimes over the top and particularly disjointed because of the animation style and the mismatch between the faces and the voice acting.
Okay, I think both of those things are true, and I think Williams, what he heard, it contributes to what Daniel heard, which is there's no magic in this because of the lack of anthropomorphism. And what I mean by that, in the original one, they can make the characters more human because it's animation, right? They can have be more expressive. Here, it's almost like you're watching a nature documentary with how good the CGI is. So yeah, it is an accomplishment in the same way that Avatar was an accomplishment technology wise. But execution wise, it's not for a story. It's not for a movie. But this is all of this. Oh, I remember what I wanted to say. I was trying to stall for something. The perfect example is this is the song I Just Can't Wait to Be King. If you want to see how they take the magic out of that, just watch that. So remember when the preview of Prince Ali came out and people were like, oh, well, that's not as exciting as the original. Mm-hmm. Well, it can't be because it's not animation. Well, it's the same thing with I Just Can't Wait to Be King. Remember how it culminates with like the giant stack of animals and it's almost like a giant like Vegas show. It basically just stands with all it ends with all the animals standing behind him at the water hole and he's in the front and he's just singing and then he runs off.
Yeah, so it's even more than that. Like, if you remember, I'm sure you remember from the film, but if you really watch it closely, the animals go from being more realistic in the animated version, in the, I guess, cell animated version, to during that song being more cartoonish, more expressive. You know, it's clearly his imagination, right? And then that snap back to the waterhole, they're back to normal inside the continuity of the film.
Correct. And all that's gone, right? In the same way it was gone from Aladdin, it was gone from Beauty and the Beast, it's gone here. But there is actually something far more insidious going on with this movie that needs to be talked about here.
James Earl Jones's voice getting old?
Well, I mean, yeah, that was with the voice acting. His delivery was not as good. I wouldn't even say it was getting old. It was just, it just wasn't as good. Like, it's really interesting to me. I wasn't intending to talk about this, but something I was very actively aware of in the movie, and I was thinking about while watching the movie because I was, you know, bored or angry otherwise, was the fact that an actor can play the same role twice, and one can be worse than the other. You don't think of it that way. Like, you know, you don't think of it like professional sports where an athlete can have a good game and a bad game, but it's the same thing with an actor. And that's so interesting to me. That's probably a topic
well,
for
you
somebody.
You see that with stage actors all the time, right?
Right. But you don't really think about that on film because they have so many takes to try and get it right and everything. And it, with the stage actors, again, that's probably a discussion for somebody who knows more about that stuff, a professional actor. That's not something I could talk about. I just find that interesting from a viewer standpoint. As far as the more insidious things going on in this movie, remember how we talked about that they randomly made Gaston into a cold-blooded murderer, and we talked about how they took they gave Jasmine a song, a female empowerment song. They've made Ariel black. They took the song "We'll Make a Man Out of You" out of Mulan. So they made all these little changes, and we could argue what degree they are. Do you remember the line in the Lion King trailer that I was most worried about that had to do with making these changes that for no reason?
Ooh, interesting. I remember you talking about it, but I don't remember the specific line.
So the line was when Mufasa tells Simba, a king isn't worried about what he can take, it's what he can give. Well, that is... I'm going to actually ask this as a question rather than state it. If you could think about the most negative possible place that could go, where would you guess it would go?
Sacrifice of some sort? But I don't know.
Essentially, sacrifice of some sort in the form of communism, essentially.
Yeah.
So Scar becomes king, and it's not about him mismanaging the lands. It's all about, he literally flat out says, it's about what I can take. We're just going to take everything we can. You've been too worried about taking, about not taking before. Well, now that I'm in charge, we're going to take, and the hyenas are going to take everything. And then this is where it gets particularly, particularly bad. Okay. I'm not making this up. This is real. He says to Sarabi, Mufasa's wife, now that Mufasa's dead, it's time for you to become my queen. And he says to her, stop being so selfish. And then she says to him, you're the one who's being selfish. All you're doing is taking. Now, right. Now, if this was it on its own, you'd say, okay, this is just a typical attack on selfishness, right? This is just, there's always the line where there are certain people who use selfishness to mean narcissism, and those are the more rational people. I'm starting to judge people on that in my life. Are they using selfish to mean narcissistic? At which case, I'm not going to squabble with them about the word because they really mean narcissism. And she could have meant it in that way, right? She could have meant it in that way if that was the only thing in the movie. Now, we have to talk about Timon and Pumbaa. In the original movie, I would say Timon and Pumbaa are sort of about evasion. Would you say that's fair? Hakuna Matata is not worrying about the implications of your actions and the consequences of your actions. Just being morally...
They're hedonists, right? Epicureans.
Correct.
Yeah, and I think their character arc is moving that from evasion to letting go of what you can't control, right? Like, they change it from no worries, right, to okay, we're going to do what we can and not because it changes for Simba, right? Simba goes from that hedonistic letting go to, like, no, I own the parts I can control, right?
Correct, 100%. But here they go deeper into that. So I would say in the original movie, and just give me a quick, like, if you agree or not, I don't think Timon and Pumbaa are malevolent or harmful in the original movie in the sense that I think they're just benevolent characters. Maybe harmful was a bad word, but I think they're benevolent. I think they're generally well-meaning and they're supposed to be good guys, but it's supposed to be that they're engaging in the same mistake Simba is making. Would you say that's fair?
Right.
In this movie, they're more of a temptation for Simba. So they're drawn as a contrast to the circle of life, where Timon says life is just a meaningless line. So now they become nihilists.
What?
They become full-on hedonistic, selfish nihilists. So the two alternatives Simba is given to the end morality, which I'm going to get to in a second, is he can either be on Mufasa's side or he can be on the side of Timon and Pumbaa, which is nihilistic hedonism, which is essentially narcissism, or it can be with Scar, which is, again, a form of narcissism. So selfishness is portrayed in this movie as hedonistic nihilism or complete and pure sociopathy, basically, with Scar. And then at the end of the movie, which makes no sense if anyone saw my tweet out there about this, at the end of the movie, it is said, and I think it's Sarabi who says it, a king's greatest ability is compassion. So not rationality, compassion. Now, this is what I mean about taking the anthropomorphization out of this movie. Maybe this all works if they're really just lions. If they're real lions, okay, yeah, all of this works logically, right? Because they're not fucking human and they don't have a mind to use to figure things out. They are just purely feeling creatures. They're purely animalistic creatures. But if you're trying to make this a story about humans, all you're doing is preaching communism. And it even reveals the greatest irony here. And this was my tweet. They're going to sit there and say that the king's greatest ability is compassion. And how do they kick Scar and the hyenas out of the Hidelands? They kick the shit out of them. So then isn't the king's greatest ability violence? Physical violence? And isn't that shown with Mufasa? That's how he ruled from the beginning? He ruled over Scar with his physicality because he was stronger. And that's how Scar got the scar. And that's why the hyenas were living away.
Yeah, that's the logical implication.
So the movie fails in on itself for that reason, because of the same reasons. It's essentially, though, they turn The Lion King into communism the movie.
Nice.
It was bound to happen with the cast that was involved. I mean, do you think Beyonce and Donald Glover would sign on if it was anything other than that?
I don't know enough about Beyonce to say what her beliefs are. Donald Glover, yes, I'm with you 100%, but I don't know enough about Beyonce and Jay-Z to say.
I do. I think I do.
Okay, well, we can have that discussion later. That's something I'd be interested to hear about your thoughts on that. For now, let's move forward to Trailer Takedown. We've already given you a little preview of Trailer Takedown. As always, if you want a full-on preview of Trailer Takedown, you just go to themidside.com/podcast. I usually put the trailers up on Saturday mornings. This week was very heavy with Comic-Con trailers. So if you want to just, you know, watch all the Comic-Con trailers, you'll have watched them ahead of time. But go to themidside.com/podcast, watch the trailers before the episode, after the episode, or during the episode. You can pause it, watch.
Trailer Takedown. First trailer.
Playing with Fire seems John Cena take The Rock's career path, where he's in a kids movie where he stars opposite a precocious kid who makes him more likable. This is like the Game Plan or the Tooth Fairy movie that The Rock did. I have one thing to say about this movie. I'm glad to see that other studios have decided to start doing live-action remakes of their animated stories. I just think this was a very weird direction for Illumination to take Despicable Me. I probably will not see this. I didn't see a lot of The Rock's early stuff like this. I didn't start to like him until later. So I probably won't see this. Tackle.
You say he's taking The Rock's career path. Didn't The Rock take Arnold Schwarzenegger's career path? Because that's kind of all I kept thinking about.
I mean, it's the same thing. Batista's doing it too, right? With the spy movie with the little girl.
Yeah, this generation's Arnold Schwarzenegger, except not as personable, which is weird. There's nothing really appealing about this. I assume this is for children and families, and it will make some money because it's PG or G or whatever it is. And smart move in the sense that he'll make money off this, and he'll get more work if this is what he wants. But nothing in it for me. Tackle. William?
I think that this will have to be remade to take the fire out, because
yeah, but
fire
then all they have to sing is "We Didn't Start the Fire,"
and people might start fires after watching this movie. So they'll have to edit it before it goes to Netflix.
Are you saying fire bad?
Fire bad. Tackle.
Tackle. Second trailer.
The Witcher is a Netflix original series based on a video game on Netflix. I already said on Netflix, whatever. It stars Henry Cavill. I mean, look, whatever. If you like this kind of thing, you like this kind of thing. I'm never going to find the time to watch this. For me, this is a tackle. I really put this in there for William to see what he had to say. Daniel?
Controversial take. Didn't look horrible. That's my controversial take. Didn't look great, certainly, and some confusing dialogue about how chaos is the most dangerous thing in the world, comma, but if you don't have control over it, it will kill you. It's like, wait, that's not a logical sentence. I think someone misedited that in the trailer. Even though it doesn't look terrible, as Justin said, too much content in the world, not enough time. So, tackle.
Tackle.
William?
So, the trailer looks well-produced. That has pretty good monsters that match what's in the game, which is a lot of the this is based on a book, but the game is really how this story got big. But there's a couple concerns from this trailer and from some of the leaks from the set. First of all, you guys probably didn't notice, but one of the main sort of like troop level bad guys, they made their costume into a penis helmet and scrotum armor, and I'm not making that up. We know this from leaks and from people looking at closely at the video. The primarily female writing staff wanted these characters to be smashing the patriarchy. Also, I don't know if you noticed, but did you know this is from like Polish lore? Like this is based on Polish lore, kind of like how Tolkien's work is based on sort of that Nordic sort of northeastern lore. Did you guys pick up on that?
Hug.
Well, you might not want to hug it, because if you look at the cast list, you'll notice a lot of baming going on. So one of the main characters is black. And in the story and in the video game, she goes out of her way to stay pale. So I'm not sure how that's going to work for someone who happens to be black. And they replace someone who's sort of described in this story based on Polish lore as being from an Arabic region with someone who is black. They replaced, of course, the redhead with someone who is not redheaded. And the red hair is very important. Indicating
Wait,
something
did they,
in the story.
Did they replace the redhead with the black person?
No, not this time. They replaced it with an Israeli actress, I believe. So there's a lot of concerns, social justice concerns here. With this might be a social justice take on this movie, which is really unfortunate because the source material is very medieval and violent. And like the themes are dark. So it makes you wonder how they're going to be able to bring this woke diversity into this theme. So that being said, I will give this a try for science. So I'm going to Netflix and hug it.
Netflix and hug.
That took a turn.
This is how not collectivist I am. I literally don't give a shit or not about the fact that this is Polish and there's no Polish representation. Whatever.
Well, I don't normally either, but it in the evidence of we're going to wokeify the story instead of portraying the story, you know, true to the themes of the story, it has to be brought up. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, it's similar to the criticism of The Little Mermaid, yeah. Right? Like, fucking Rene Auberjonois' chef is running around singing in French, and it's a story based in European lore, and then you're going to make, everyone black? Like, it... You just have to ask the question, what are they going to do with the story?
Yep. Third trailer.
Top Gun Maverick is the surprise sequel to Top Gun. When this trailer came out, I love Daniel's reaction there because I was like, oh my God, this is like, would you make something new, Hollywood? I have to ask you guys, did anyone know this was coming? Because I didn't know it was coming.
No, I want to say no, and then when you said it, I wasn't totally shocked, so maybe we had mentioned it before. I don't know.
I'm not surprised in the sense that
nothing can surprise me anymore that they remake. So
I had heard rumors, and everyone was scratching their head, like, where are they going to go with this? So I'm interested in your take based on the trailer.
Okay, well, my initial take was I had Daniel's fatigue take where I was like, can we just fucking stop? Can we just stop? Can we just make original stuff? But then I remembered, Daniel, how against Cobra Kai I was. I remember
exactly
when that came out, and I was like,
"We don't fucking need this.
Like, why do we need this? Why do we need a Karate Kid reboot? Why do we need this shit? Why do we need it?" But they did it so well. Now here's the thing: this is called Top Gun Maverick. What are we losing nowadays? We're losing masculinity. We're losing the rugged individualist hero of Die Hard. Right? Die Hard was so good because it was at a time in our country where the villain literally said the old American hero is dead, Mr. Cowboy, Mr. John Wayne. What if this movie comes out and does the same thing? Where it says, we need the Maverick. We need this character back. This is important. We need to fly into the danger zone. This is what we need in America. I am going to give this a chance. Simply for that reason, and also because John Hamm is in it, and there's like one John Hamm movie I don't like, which is Bridesmaids. Every other John Hamm movie I like, I think. So I'm going to give it a chance for those two reasons. The main reason be, you know what? I made a mistake with Cobra Kai. I made a big mistake with Cobra Kai. Those people fucking get it. And you know what? Maybe these people get it too. There's an opportunity. Now, I could sit in the theater and I could be like, I've made a terrible mistake. But you know what? I'm willing to give this 2 hours to see what happens. I'm going to do that. I'm going to do that for myself, and I'm going to do that for the Midsiders out there. Hug.
Hug.
Daniel?
I am not willing to give this 2 hours or 2 minutes. I didn't even make it through all the way through the trailer because after the, I don't know, 25th scene that was exactly a scene from the first Top Gun movie that they were just redoing in this movie, there's no content to this. Glad to hear your report. If it ends up being sort of counterculture, great. Maybe I'll watch it on Netflix, but no and no and no again. Tackle.
Tackle.
It's called Maverick. They better make it counterculture.
Yeah, I'm getting Cobra Kai vibes. I'm all in. It's got guns. It's got jets. It's got motorcycles. It's a Tom Cruise movie. Let's do it.
Hug.
To be clear, it has fighter planes. It doesn't have the New York Jets. And also, does this mean we have a Days of Thunder reboot coming?
Oh, God.
Let's hope not.
Days of Thunder, the rainy season or something?
Final trailer.
I love Days of Thunder.
Final trailer.
Cats! Don't step on it, Justin.
Oh my god. Cats! This is the trailer that had the internet going crazy this week because of its weirdness. It's the Broadway musical, which was already weird as fuck, and then they like CGI their faces and stuff, which is strange. And I was equally weirded out by this trailer. But you didn't think, Midsiders, there was going to be a butt to this. The second time I watched this trailer, which is they showed it before The Lion King. Now, that's the thing I want to say. I would not have watched this trailer again if I was not already sitting as a captive audience.
I can't even stand to look at the banner image you have on top of the trailers on themidside.com/trailer-takedown-preview.
But because I was a captive audience... Because I already knew it was weird, and I was able to accept that, the trailer plays much better the second time. It played much better for me for the second time.
So you're saying that the second time you watched furry porn, it was better?
I saw actual furries at Comic-Con, and people were like, who are those people? I was like, they're furries. They're like, what characters are they? I go, they create their own characters. And people were like, what? Oh my god, this is weird. I go, you don't want to know what they do. But anyway, no, look, I'm not saying I'm going to see this movie, but I'm going to say it's not as bad as people are making it out to be. I mean, it is by the guy who did The King's Speech, so there is a level of execution in this. There is a level of talent in this, but of course then they put Rebel Wilson in this movie. If somehow this came out and like somebody saw it that I trusted and said it was good, I would see this. But I'm not gonna go out of my way to see this. Tackle.
Tackle.
Daniel?
Okay, so I already knew that Cats was weird before I saw this, and so when I watched the trailer, the weirdness didn't hit me as hard as it did for some other people, because Cats is a fucking weird musical. It's just weird. You have to accept that. It's really strange. I just didn't like anything else about it either. I didn't like the show Cats, the original show Cats. The story is stupid. The songs are fine, because Andrew Lloyd Webber's a competent, if not overly schmaltzy, cheesy writer. There's nothing about this that's interesting, even if you abstracted away the terrible CGI and the weirdness about it. But it's weird. You have to accept that it's Cats. It's humans playing Cats. So that being said, no. Tackle. William?
This is nightmare fuel. I don't know how else to describe it. This is... I can imagine the fappening that is going on right now in the furry community, and it's just not something I can stomach. It's actually disgustingly in the uncanny valley for a lot of things. And even the way... I'm sure this is the same in the musical. I've never seen the musical. But even the way their exaggerated movements and the way they're dancing just makes it so creepy. How could you pay attention to the music when all that creepiness is going on? I guess maybe if I just watched a black screen and just listened to the movie, I'd be able to sit through it. But this... I don't think I could sit through this at all. Tackle.
So, based on what William said and what Daniel said, there has to be a market for this. I mean, the musical is a hit. Yeah, but it has to be beyond that. Who sees the musical, Daniel?
Single ladies.
Single ladies and musical theater majors.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the market for this movie?
The people like Andrew Lloyd Webber. The music is, you know, memorable. Because it's very emotional, it's very pathos. So there's that. People like this musical. It was a big hit when I was growing up. So I don't know. I have no nostalgia for this whatsoever. It's weird and strange and weird and strange again.
To let people know the like to dislike ratio, 79K like, 190K dislike. With 7.2 million views.
And the 79K likes are all from Taylor Swift fans who I'm just picturing going into the theater and just being in total shock at what they're seeing.
I tackled them all, and if I had to watch one, it's clearly The Witcher, which I won't, but if I had to, that would be it. So,
well, you might end up watching it if we say the scrotum uniforms and the... baming of the cast is not messing with the themes.
It's true.
Yeah, I had heard about that. But let's go back in time a little bit in our next segment and talk about a movie that they did all do all this crap to, and there are interesting cultural implications about it. It's time for Life on the Midside. Take a good look around. Does life really suck? Are we just complaining? I hope that this mic is on, because I'm on. Okay, so this quandary, this question, this pondering comes from... There's something in my eye. It's really distracting right now. It comes from Midsider Dan, a.k.a. Trailer Takedown Dan. And I distilled it down to a question, and then I'm going to read some quotes from him. Basically, what level of disagreement about things like art is acceptable in a romantic relationship? And I think this is a really important discussion for us here in the Midside, because that's something we talk about all the time. Like, if you go on a date with somebody and they liked the Lion King movie, is that a deal breaker? What if you're dating somebody and they don't like Zack Snyder? Is that a deal breaker? Whoa. Or here's the example that he gave. It finally happened. By the way, I just think it's funny that he says it finally happened. It may be because of where he lives, but just the fact that it finally, like, he was expecting this to happen at some point. On date 3 with a girl, she revealed that she liked The Last Jedi more than any other Star Wars movie.
Gone.
She liked it for all the reasons I hated it. That might be a deal breaker. She loved Vice Admiral Gender Studies and didn't find that name as amusing as I did. Loved that Poe got put in his place. Loved that there were minority heroes. Loved Rose. Well, now you're out with me, too. Rose? Really? All right. She mentioned that she liked The Last Jedi because it was taking down the patriarchy. Ugh. Okay, I need to stop for a second, okay? This girl literally sounds like a caricature. Because I've heard people argue that the reason The Last Jedi is good is it subverts expectations. That's at least an argument that isn't couched in social justice. But to hear someone actually take the social justice argument for The Last Jedi, the fact that that person exists kind of scares me. Anyway, continuing. She was excited to see minority characters represented. She really didn't like Han Solo from the originals due to his lack of consent at the "you like me because I'm a scoundrel" kiss. She was happy to see the attitude of Han Solo repudiated by The Last Jedi. First of all, before we get into this whole discussion, Daniel, I had never heard this lack of consent argument with Han Solo. I'm sure you've heard it.
Yeah, I've heard it. It's...
What the fuck?
Yeah, it's this mentality of, you know, he's essentially a Me Too character because he planted a kiss on Leia when they were fighting. So,
well, Guido didn't consent to get shot either.
Greedo, so. Not Guido. It's not Italian.
Hey,
he's Rodian. Thank you.
Is that the Star Wars Jersey Shore
exactly.
crossover where he just shoots the situation and everyone's like, okay, yeah, he shot first this time.
That's right. So Han Solo, Me Too. Go ahead.
I'm mind boggled at that. So, I mean, I'm going to throw this question to you guys. I mean, Daniel, you're being a little glib here, but to me, this situation is so extreme that it would be a deal breaker. That if someone liked a movie for all the reasons you hated it, to me, that's when we're talking about when it's idea based, right? Not like, you know, oh, well, I love this movie because it has, you know, Fred Savage in it. Oh, and I hate Fred Savage. Like, at that point, it's just like, okay, whatever. It's just preference for Fred Savage. But here, when there are ideas that are at stake, and it's literally this is so extreme to me that I think this would be a deal breaker. So then the question is, where is the line here? What is the level of disagreement that is acceptable on these things?
So,
for a healthy relationship.
Oh, okay. Just to be clear. So this to me isn't indicative of a disagreement about art. This to me is a disagreement about the fundamental nature of reality. And so what she's talking about, smashing the patriarchy and minority characters and Han's Me Too whatever, this is someone who has bought hook, line, and sinker into the social justice worldview, which is a distortion of the world. So it didn't matter if she likes TSJ, hates it, whatever. It's that these other things are going on that is a deal breaker, assuming that Trailer Takedown Dan doesn't agree with these things, which is a pretty safe assumption. So when you have fundamental disagreements about reality, it's hard to sustain a romantic relationship, I think. That does not mean that you have to agree on everything, especially politics. Many people have successful relationships who disagree on politics, but social justice is far more than politics. It is a philosophy. It is a way of looking at the world. It is a critical examination of that which exists and saying that which exists is distorted to this horrifying view of mankind and reality that I have. So certainly when you have this kind of disagreement, I don't think it's possible to have a romantic relationship. Can we set that baseline? Any pushback there from anyone?
Yeah, no, I think that's a good baseline. And I think then the discussion is not art itself. It's where this bleeds into art. And I think that's the problem. So then let me give you guys another example. And William, you can
chime in on this. All right. So I'll push back a bit on this. So this sounds like an NPC reading from a script. The non-playable character for you non-gamers out there. This sounds like everything that is said between all folks that are not philosophically deep but immersed in West Coast California culture. So I think what you have to do is take this as a data point and test it. Does she live her life this way. Just because someone parrots thoughts that are just coming from the culture doesn't mean they actually live their life this way. Does she go around smashing the patriarchy? Does she go around, worried about hashtag Me Too stuff all the time? Then you're going to see this in her behavior, and you're going to be able to draw the conclusion, oh no, this is really her relationship with reality. Does that make sense?
So that, yeah. And that was similar to the question I was going to ask. It was a disagreement, and I'm saying that politely, I had with my girlfriend about the show You on Netflix. Do you know about this show?
No.
So this is the show, I guess it's based on the book, but it's the show where this guy meets a girl and her boyfriend is like a total like dipshit and treats her like shit, right? He's like this total rich, it's in New York City, he's like this rich guy who just takes her for granted and treats her terribly. And then he is like this guy who works in a bookstore, and it's shown as the typical, you know, that guy's alpha and the guy who works in the bookstore is beta. But then the beta guy becomes this stalker guy who kidnaps and holds hostage the boyfriend and everything. And he becomes a psycho murderer, basically. And I was like, this entire show is just a fucking evil take on masculinity. And it really upset me that she watched the whole thing and enjoyed it. It bothered me on a fundamental level. So where is the line then, William, between what you're saying of repeating NPC things or watching things because, you know, other people she knew were watching and that's why she watched it, and not looking deeper into these things to enjoy them or not?
Well, again, I think it comes back to looking deeper into the values that you share and the behaviors and values, or the behaviors that those values cause, right? That's really important. The trap a lot of folks fall into that hold ideas seriously is they approach this very rationalistically, right? They'll practically give a survey and have a checklist on views, right? And like, if I limited my dating pool to only people who like Zack Snyder and think DS9 is the best Star Trek, then I would have a very small dating pool, right?
Yeah, Justin would be your dating pool.
But
those both things do accurately describe me, by the way.
But you have to look at more the way their values are expressed in their life, and this is one piece of that. And you need to see whether your values, and in this case her values, are aligning on things that are fundamental to both of you and to your relationship. So is this a deal breaker? I think it is, looking at it, but I would want other pieces of evidence about how this manifests in her behavior with you and with reality in general.
Yeah, I'm taking her statements
at face value here.
Sorry, one last point to that. And it would be different if she had said something like, you know, I liked Vice Admiral Holdo because she was a really strong female character and I wish Star Wars had more of those. I liked the fact that it was, as Justin said earlier, it was a different kind of Star Wars. It wasn't the Star Wars of the others, which I didn't really like. It was a different kind because it had even if she said that, like, it had diverse characters or something like that. Like, those are different manifestations of the concepts in what Dan experienced here that aren't as pointed and as social justice-y and could mean many other things. When you say, I like they smash the patriarchy, difficult to parse that out as anything other than what it is. But I like the strong female characters could mean any number of things. So the part of it about the art thing, Justin, is what elements of the art are they choosing to highlight as that which they like? So, for instance, in the show Your Girlfriend Like You, which I actually thought was the letter U in a Sesame Street spinoff. But anyway,
Would have been better.
is it that she's responding to the anti-masculinity stuff and pointing that out as what she enjoyed? Or is it like, hey, I thought the acting was awesome. It was really depressing and a lot of stuff was wrong. But man, the performances by the lead actors were ridiculous. You know, what elements of the art does the person enjoy? Are they reacting to?
Yeah.
What lights up their sense of life?
As an example, I love Donnie Darko, despite its horrible theme. Right. I just love the way that film is put together. I can watch that film anytime. I can set aside the terrible theme, but I could totally understand someone else watching that movie and just getting so put off by the theme that they wouldn't be able to watch it. They would think it was a terrible movie.
Because remember, Justin, you can deep dive on this, but art really does speak to our sense of life. It's sort of the unspoken way we react to the world, the thing at our core of how we interact with reality. And if the thing that's sparking them about the art is this horrible social justiceness, or if it's, you know, I picked out this one character who I loved, you know, the rest of the show was terrible, but this one person who was very independent, I loved them, and so I watched the whole show for that person. Those are very different reactions to a piece of art.
Yeah, and honestly, that's what I've been trying to ask you for the past however many minutes, where I was going to use a phrase you always say. You know, you always say politics is downstream of culture. Wouldn't you say here that art is downstream of sense of life?
Yes, to further your use of that metaphor, I think that's true. I would never phrase it that way. That's why I leave it up to you.
Right.
But I think the point you're making is absolutely correct, which is, you know, whether or not they like a particular movie, TV show, or whatever doesn't tell you much about that person. People can, you know, Ayn Rand didn't like Beethoven because she thought he had a bad sense of life. Beethoven is my favorite composer of all time. Does that mean I'm an evil person, according to Ayn Rand? I don't think so. Maybe to some very literal objectivists it does, but no, I don't think it would to Ayn Rand. The question is, what is it about the art are they responding to? If I had said, I like Beethoven because his music is super sad and I respond to the sadness because life is really terrible. And so that speaks to me about Beethoven. I think that would make me, you know, well, I'm not a bad person, but I think Ayn Rand would say, ugh, gross. No, thanks. But what is it are they responding to in the art?
So you have to have a discussion with them about, like, learning, asking them what they responded to about, what they liked about it. In this case, we're saying it sounds like all of the things that she liked were terrible, so get rid of her, preferably behind a dumpster somewhere. I'm kidding.
Well, just to put a bow on it, remember that, you know, most people are terrible at introspection. They, you know, mindlessly absorb things from the culture. So you need to test the assumption that this is really what they think deep down, that it's really connected to their sense of life and values, or are they just reading from the NPC script?
And that was the next thing I was going to say that transitions into it very well, is the important part that comes out of this is this person willing to have an open and honest dialogue with you about liking these things and why they're good or not? Because if they are, then that's the ability to start a long-term relationship. Otherwise, if they just shut you down and that's it, that's not ever going to be a relationship. So it's not only that these views are held, it's how does this person react to you having a genuinely honest, open discussion about these ideas and these concepts in these pieces of art.
Yeah. Weird that it reminds me of a date I went on that I'm sure I told you about, Justin, where this was a person I met on OkCupid long before Fies and I ever knew each other. And, you know, my profile there was very much open that I was an objectivist, although didn't have a bunch of Rand quotes or anything, but it did state it. So we got to the date, and the first question she asked me after the hello was, why the hell do you like Ayn Rand? And then she spent 2 hours berating me about liking Ayn Rand. At the end of the night, she tried to kiss me and ask for a second date.
Yeah.
It's like, what the hell is going on here? Yeah.
Yeah, I remember you saying that. And I went on a date once where we were talking about Marvel movies, and the girl said she didn't like the romanticism in Marvel movies. And I was like, I didn't say this at the time, but I was like, that's the one good thing about Marvel movies, is that there are elements of romanticism. That's what's redeemable about them.
That's what the money's for.
Yeah, sorry. That's when I always pull out my one of my manager tools from my toolbox. And when someone says something like that, I'm always like, oh, really? Tell me more about that. And just really let them dig into it so I can try and understand. Because maybe they don't even know what romanticism is, right?
Oh, I thought with
that was probably the case, but I was just so dumbfounded that somebody said that, that I was like...
I thought with your other hand you were flagging down the waiter, William. Yeah. Anyway.
I was just, can you imagine somebody says that on a date with me, though, how dumbfounded I was?
Yes. Boy, did they pick the wrong person to say that to.
It's like, you know, if I was on a date with somebody, they'd be like, man, you know, I really like the Patriots except for Tom Brady. I'd be like, what?
Like, that's the point
about?
Yeah,
he is the Patriots. This is like okay, last story, which isn't dating related, but then we'll end the show. This is like when my dad, like, the Patriots win so much that my dad has now taken to arguing with me about who is more influential on their success, Tom Brady or Bill Belichick. This is what we argue about now. Well, he'll sit there and he'll go, it's all Brady. And I'll go like, well, you have to see what Belichick did. Belichick's nothing without Brady. That's what this kind of conversation is.
Oh, boy.
All right. Let's end this episode. What did we learn this trip, William?
Oh, man. Well, I learned that you can erase any redhead from any film, and I might still be able to watch it.
Daniel?
I learned that Michigan hates conservative Asians, I think. Unclear. Justin, what did you learn?
I learned that Michigan doesn't have any good-looking Asians because they think that girl is good-looking.
Of course, that's what you learned. We hope you learned something here at The Midside this week. Check us out on social media at The Midside everywhere except Instagram, apparently. Did I miss this announcement? Or you don't have to get into it now.
Yeah, but, I got annoyed and disabled it for a while.
Okay.
We'll see if I go back soon.
So check us out everywhere else. But more importantly, go to themidside.com/podcast and listen to all the past shows. Go there. Don't go to some stream that you're reliant on. Go directly to the source, themidside.com/podcast, because we also have a store there, /store, where you can get your Midside merch. You can also read articles that Justin's written in the past, including reviews and opinion pieces, and you can check out Nolan Notes and Snyder Series, and man, go back years and years and years. But I guess if you are going to rely on streams, subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts and Google Play, if that's what that's still called, and give us a 5-star review. That helps us move up the rankings. Thanks to all of our 5-star reviews.
I got one better for you if you don't want to rely on streams. You can email me or contact me, and I will send you the episode MP3 directly. How about that?
Justin will,
he will
burn
record it,
to it
onto
DVD.
An 8-track and send it to you if you request.
That's right. We had the
I'm
same
I'm not
going
to do that. But you can do that yourself. I'm just saying, all of a sudden, you don't have to rely on it. I mean, because we're even on Podbean. The stream on our website is from Podbean, so Podbean could take it down technically.
He will send it via Western Union, via Telegraph.
He will revive the Pony Express himself.
By the way, I'm looking at the midside.com/store. I forgot I named the False Dichotomy Bro shirt the False Dichotto Tee.
Wow.
That's awesome.
So check that stuff out. Thanks to Liberty.me for syndicating us on their feed. Libertarians represent. And thanks to Patreon.com/TheMidside. All of our Patreon subscribers, you're awesome. You help us buy things like microphones to help out with strange audio issues. And you can go to Patreon.com/TheMidside and become a subscriber there and get exclusive Patreon-only content from time to time. From time to time. From time to time. So not all the time. And that helps us keep the lights on and whatnot. And most importantly, telling a friend about the show. And especially tell them that this is not a show where we sit around and agree with each other all the time, as fully on view this week with William and I screaming at each other. This is a show where we are not afraid to disagree. Because that is what life is about. Intellectual honesty, intellectual debate, and we need more of that. So tell some people who are interested in that kind of thing to come on over and join us here in The Midside from week to week. Until next time, I love you.
This concludes your journey into The Midside. I'm Justin Elmazeski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a demonetized day.
Welcome to the Midside, where we have no idea why I'll take that again. I went around work for a second where I was like, walkie.